one thing that we've just done recently with a customer success team at QuotaPath is shift from we're doing a QBR because it's time to do a QBR to actually looking at the sales compensation lifecycle of our customers. Mm. Most of our customers are on like an annual fiscal year, which means that they're probably setting their comp plans in Q4 to roll them out in Q1 because they have a sales kickoff event and trainings. And they want their all of their reps to be good to go, right? And go sell and hit those targets.
This is Taking the Lead, a podcast for B2B tech professionals, leaders, and executives who want to learn from female icons in the tech industry. In each episode, host Christina Brady interviews women who are driving revenue for some of the most respected tech companies in the world. Are you ready to get inspired?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Taking the Lead. I am Christina Brady. I am not only your host, but I am also the SVP of sales at Speckit, where we help to make every single rep your best rep. And I am honored today to be with an incredible marketing leader, Sarah Strobe. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
This is certainly a long time coming after connecting here and there and finally seeing each other in person and saying, oh my gosh, the world needs more and more of you. So you are currently the chief marketing officer at an incredible company called QuotaPath, but certainly you've had a journey to get there. So tell us a little bit about your professional journey and your story and what got you into the incredible position that you're in.
Sure. So I have a little bit of a unique background. I actually started my career as a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. And after 4 years of lobbying, I moved into my first tech company because we were selling software to nonprofits and NGOs to help them do online advocacy and online fundraising. I have since gone from startup through acquisition 3 times, most recently being TaxJar into Stripe. So I've been on that journey from early day startup all the way through growing rapidly and being acquired. And yes, now I am the chief marketing officer at QuotaPath, which is a sales compensation platform company. And I'm also, it's not quite in my LinkedIn bio, I'm also the head of customer success at QuotaPath as well.
Okay. And this is what we're going to dig into because you are the first CMO that I've ever met that is also a head of customer success. And I think that's brilliant. And I want to drill into it because maybe we should be doing more of that. But before we get there, how did you go from lobbyist to marketer? And then how long did it take you to get that coveted C-suite position? That in and of itself, I think, is almost worthy of a whole episode.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And that was definitely a journey. So I think first that lobbyist to marketer, I often say that lobbying is actually what taught me how to be a marketer. When you are a lobbyist, it's all about understanding the issues at stake. So kind of knowing the market landscape, being able to communicate that issue to your constituents or be able to explain kind of the benefits or what happens if there's no action to key stakeholders. So again, that's kind of positioning and messaging, pretty much a core of marketing. And the last part, especially because I worked on behalf of NGOs, was really getting your constituent base to take action. So in order to make a compelling ask, have the right CTAs and motivate people to make a call to Congress, to sign a petition, to send a letter. Well, oh my goodness, if that's not marketing, then what is? So I often think about my lobbying days as actually the foundation of marketing. I didn't study marketing in college. I studied it by doing it as a lobbyist.
Almost better, like that kind of real life experience. And then you wound up not only going into marketing, but getting into, a large leadership role. So it goes from I'm doing the job, it translates into marketing in this sort of professional SaaS tech world to leading the entire strategy. So at what point do you feel like in your career you were ready to go from I'm being a practitioner and now I can lead the strategy?
That's a great question. And I skipped over that at first. So one, my first role in tech companies was actually in customer success. So we'll come back to that and to why I lead marketing and customer success today. But it was just a journey in terms of, you know, taking on larger and larger accounts as a customer success manager, then seeing opportunities for our customer success team to change how we can do onboarding differently, how we can change these processes of where customer success paired up with sales earlier in the process. And every time that I had the opportunity to kind of do something based on what I was seeing, I would raise my hand. So I think that's a lot of like career trajectory of like, if you, the classic, if you see something, say something, and then maybe go do something about it. And that's really what helped me start to take on larger and larger IC roles and then actually start to kind of make the case to build my team at times. And I think that's the second part, have that entrepreneurial spirit and have that focus on the bottom line. And with that, you'll start to be able to kind of grow your impact in your company. And that led me to taking on, you know, director roles and VP roles. And it's really what continued my ability to kind of move into that C-suite. So when I got acquired into IBM, I was with a very small company, Cloudant, that got acquired by IBM. There are 70 people within this 380,000 person organization. And we just knew how to do things differently and how we were marketing to developers. And so I just kept that entrepreneurial spirit, kept that focus on the developer and what we were doing. And that led me to leading a team of 40 people at IBM, helping push forward some of our first, you know, public cloud offerings, some of our first, you know, data and analytics and Watson AI offerings. And it's, again, just that taking the hand, seeing the bigger thing that you could change or influence. And I think the last part too is like bringing people along with you is one of the things that I learned at IBM when we wanted to have a focus on more of our software as a service offerings within our portfolio at IBM Cloud and Analytics. I said, I'm going to teach people who aren't used to this kind of business model what it means. And I held our own internal training day. I brought in other experts from outside IBM. And I opened it up to any marketers at IBM who were interested in learning about it. You know, I didn't have a directive to go do this. I just thought this is a good way to bring everybody along on an initiative that's really important. And I think that's then what led to me being able to jump into that C-suite when I left IBM to go back to startups. So I've officially only been in the C-suite role for, gosh, what is it now? Like four years or so. And it's just being really curious, bringing people along and staying focused on the bottom line and being wanting to have that impact, you know, internally and externally.
I mean, I feel like your curiosity is without a doubt one of the things that has put you in these really, really unique positions. Yeah. And probably allowed you to think about the role in a way that most people don't. So I've heard of BDR teams rolling into marketing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think a lot of companies go back and forth on like, is BDR a true sales function? Are they more of a demand gen function? Yep. Are they more of a branding function? Are they more
leading? Right?
Yeah. I have never heard of customer success rolling into marketing. And I have to hear, was this your brainchild? Did this already exist in the role? How did you get to a point where you're there?
That's a great question. It's something that did evolve so far over my time at QuotaPath. And it was something, though, that we started with that in mind, I would say, a little bit when I joined QuotaPath. I like to think of myself, a lot of people will ask, oh, what kind of marketer are you? You know, yeah. Is your focus demand gen or product marketing or brand? And I'm at the point, you know, and I think both in what I've learned in my experience, as well as just my focus. I'm like, well, I can do a little bit of all of it. I don't really think that I major on one area, but where I do major is being in a customer-led marketer. And you might wonder, well, what does that mean? I think that it means like taking the voice of the customer and really bringing it front and center in every single decision that you make as a company, in every way in which you respond to customer feedback or outreach. And you do that by thinking not only about what is it to acquire a customer, but what does it take to retain and expand a customer as well. And so a customer-led marketer is thinking about that full life cycle of the customer, not just acquiring them. I'm so excited to share this little tidbit. It's a friend of mine, her father says it to her when she's going through different, you know, ebbs and flows of dating. But one of his mantras is, what it takes to court her, it is the same to keep her. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I think about now with marketing as well. You know, whatever you did to acquire them, you have to do to keep retaining them. And so you have to think about that customer need. You have to really get to know not only how many, you know, what's their business model and what are their key metrics. Those are great things you should absolutely know. But you also have to know your customer like as deeply as possible. What makes them tick? What are their fears? What are they excited about? This is fascinating at TaxShard doing interviews with finance leaders who've just felt this incredible sense of responsibility for getting sales tax right. They knew that it was imperative to their business to get it right. And now at QuotaPath, talking with, you know, RevOps and finance leaders, when they talk about paying people their commissions, they're like, they feel again this lack of confidence sometimes, yeah, and this immense weight of like, this is people's livelihood. I don't want to get it wrong. I don't want to have a dispute over it. I don't want to get it wrong. And so I think that's a part of getting to know your customer is, and bringing that forward and being a customer-led marketer, is thinking through that level of understanding and bringing it forward across our entire life cycle.
Have you found that thinking about it like that actually helps you to attain some of the core metrics that a lot of other maybe customer or client success teams have a hard time with? Specifically, I hear a lot of CS teams talking about how they know that there's an importance to multi-threading and building multiple relationships within an account. But I don't know about you, if somebody just randomly emails me with a tool that we have and they're like, hey, Christina, your company has this tool and you're not using it. Want to hop on a call? I'd be like, no, I'm going to delete that, right? Like, I don't see that. So multi-threading, even within existing accounts, is really, really difficult. And then you think of the other two core outside of just churn or retention or growth, but the idea of adopting the product the way that you're supposed to, there's so much education that happens there, or even mitigating risk. Do you feel like the approach that you have in this idea of continuing a learning-based customer lifecycle actually helps you hit those metrics better?
I think so. I think it's a little bit of a work in progress. But as I mentioned, you know, it's something that, you know, when I came to QuotaPath, I thought of myself as a customer-led marketer, and I saw that there was opportunity for us to bring much more of that customer learning throughout the life cycle. And sometimes even one thing that we've just done recently with the customer success team at QuotaPath is shift from we're doing a QBR because it's time to do a QBR to actually looking at the sales compensation life cycle of our customers. Mm. Most of our customers are on like an annual fiscal year, which means that they're probably setting their comp plans in Q4 to roll them out in Q1 because they have a sales kickoff event and trainings, and they want all of their reps to be good to go, right? And go sell and hit those targets. And then, as we know, the past few years, a lot of things happen in Q1, Q2, and probably halfway through the year, you're kind of wondering, did I get it right? Was that the right sales comp plan? Or things have changed in the market or with our business. We're not selling as much of this product as we did. So there's a reevaluation period. And then you kind of come back at it again in Q4. So you don't necessarily need the same quarterly business review in Q2 that you need in Q4. What you need are comp plan check-ins, probably once to twice a year. And the one at the end has to be a review and strategy session for the year forward. But what you need to do really quickly is make sure at the start of the year that payouts are running smoothly and that there haven't been any hiccups. And what you need to do probably within 60 days after you roll out those comp plans to your team is make sure the reps are actually using the tools, they're actually logging in and seeing how their forecasting is going and things like that. So that's a rep usage. That's a totally different conversation than, you know, a comp plan strategy review. So if you take that learning and you apply it to your customer's life cycle and what their care abouts are, then I think it makes that journey, you know, much more seamless. And it helps you, again, build a better rapport with your customers, learn and understand your customers more, and ideally, right, increase adoption and usage of your product and retention. So I think that's like an opportunity that I saw coming into QuotaPath that we could do a couple of things a little bit differently. And one thing that we were talking about before that I didn't mention of, and maybe we should dig into this more, Christina, of like, why customer success and marketing? Well, a lot of things,
yeah,
customer success, you probably often think of like one-to-one relationships.
But totally.
So much, it needs to be much more scalable now, right? And a lot of it is around education and adoption. Well, who's really good at kind of like communications, education, one-to-many conversations, that's marketing. That's kind of our bread and butter. Like, we've got the skills, we've got the creativity, we've got the tools and the data. So bringing customer success and marketing together, I think will help scale customer success.
Well, absolutely. Plus, there's, you're looking at it with almost a fresh pair of eyes that we haven't looked at for this role in, I mean, decades, even down to the hiring profile. Would you say that when you are looking for CSMs or client success reps to join your team, because of this lens that you have in the background and how you approach customer advocacy and customer influence and customer education, do you find that you look at different hiring profiles for who you want to be as CSMs? Like, what are some of the unique ways that you think about hiring and staffing that team with your lens?
Yeah, well, one of the things right now is that we're looking for, like, you call them customer experience managers, and it's definitely a little bit of a different lens in terms of that communication and how do they think about managing their book of business. I don't want them to just think about, oh, well, these accounts are up for renewal in this amount of time, so these are who I reach out to. I want them to actually look at the product usage data. I want them to know those lifecycle pinpoints. And I want them to think about, how am I going to own my book of business as if it were, from a marketing lens, a group of prospects that I needed to engage? And how am I going to make an ask and think about how do I bring them value as much as I'm giving them an ask? That's something I think about from a marketing lens a lot of the times, is that, you know, that balance between I need to give you value before I can ask you for something. And that's something I look for in a CX manager as well. So how are you, CX manager, how are you going to leverage all the tools that you have across the company, whether it's product releases, kind of a customer advisory program or an early access beta program? And how are you going to be really strategic about that, or your marketing tools, your latest report, and use that to bring value to the customer? So I think about communications. I think about how they're going to own their book of business at scale and prioritize that, and how they're going to think about moving the customer along and getting them to that point where the conversation about renewal, it actually is not a sales conversation. Yeah. It's a value conversation. And it's almost a no-brainer because you've been delivering that value every step of the way.
Well, and that kind of brings me into the actual customer lifecycle and almost your service or communication cadence, because so many organizations very either deliberately or accidentally build a customer lifecycle motion that is very self-serving to the organization, right? At these touch points, we're usually going to have three QBRs and then a renewal conversation. And then we're going to talk about our data and we want what we want them to see and tell them how amazing they're doing. Or we might be telling them they have to be using it more, but it all kind of comes down to this. It is self-serving to us to continue to capture and grow the revenue and grow the logo. But as you're talking, it sounds like you're almost being a bit more prescriptive or unique about even how you approach your customer touch points. And so how do you take what has been this very set in process in SaaS for a long time of customer lifecycle and kind of flip that on its head and actually make it customer led or customer first focused? Where do you start and what do you change first if you are rebuilding this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with definitely listening to customers and again, digging in and talking with the team as well, figuring out when were those pain points and those crunch points? Well, how do we shift those? So one of the things that I heard about from my customer success team is that at the start of the year, they're just slammed. They're overwhelmed. Not only are we winning all this new business, but our existing customer base is coming back because why? Remember what we talked about? They're rolling out new comp plans to all their team members. So we were on our heels and it was very reactive and they were coming in, how do I do this? I already decided this is our plan and now I can't figure it out. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Why are they coming to us after they already determined the plan? I'm like, yeah. Did we have a conversation with them about what the plan was going to be or what they were considering and why? And sometimes it doesn't even matter how many people are on your team or things like that. You have to think about those pivot points in a company, right? And it's funny because this is very similar in tax. Like, if you're going to be expanding to a new territory, if you're going to be hiring employees in a different state, like all of these different things, you're going to be offering a new product, you're going to add a services component to what was only a software business. all of those components shift every part of your business, right? It shifts maybe how you sell. It shifts how your teams are structured. So it should shift how you compensate them. In my tax world, it meant different implications for your taxability, right? Or even what rate you tax things on. So instead of us, right, presenting data, like you said, in a QBR, what if we just asked more questions? What if we just were curious about our customer and what they were selling and how they were selling it and where they were going to go? And also, we're all excited to talk about our companies usually and like the big ideas we have or the growth we have. So that's pretty easy. Should be an easy conversation to have, right?
I mean, ideally, right?
Ideally.
But I you know, it's like you, when you're talking about the concept of renewal being a value conversation, this is where I think there's such a great shift there that needs to happen. And I think the more curiosity that you can elicit throughout the customer lifecycle about, to your point, the customer and what they're working on and what they're doing. And sure, your data is important, but the more they feel like you can guide them and help them, the more you become an asset. And so you've got this value driver when it comes to retaining the logo.
Right.
But then, I mean, I would imagine, is your team also handling expansions or do those bounce back to the AE?
They are handling expansion as well. Okay. Yeah.
So that's obviously a value and a little bit of a sales conversation. Right. And so applying the marketing lens to asking for additional dollars and growth, what are some unique ways that you approach that just because of how you think through the problem and actually connecting with people?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to understanding, you know, where are their biggest levers for change and how the what they've been able to do, you know, with the platform today will help them grow there and getting them to think forward. Again, you're talking about some of those drivers, right? So is this a company that's intrinsically optimistic or is it one that's more risk adverse? Understanding that will help you figure out like how to push that expansion opportunity or position it, right? Or when to push it versus when to like gently offer it and keep nudging it along. So I think that's one way that I would apply that marketing. Think through the customer, not only goals and metrics, but like actual feelings, values, inherent DNA, and how that might influence the opportunity for expansion.
Absolutely. And so we've got renewal, we've got expansion. The other big thing, I know thinking back in even my career or folks that I know, one of the things that happens really, really frequently when you are not doing customer education, like, and not just education on your product, but education of the industry and the competitors and what exists, because losing a customer to a competitor that has the same functionality is such an inherent loss, yet it happens a lot because they say, oh, I had no idea that your tool did that, and they prospected in and they showed us what we needed to see. And so how do you ensure that you're not only educating your customers on the use of your tool and how it provides value, but also even larger, I imagine, because you run marketing, you have the ability to train them overall on the industry and maybe even some of the competitors that might be in their inbox and why you can stay front of mind. How do you balance all that with the, you know, 15 seconds of attention that you get from a customer at any point in time?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, like the teams that I work with are amazing. And my product marketing leader works really closely with our CS director. And we'd already been running a customer newsletter for a while. And she'd been tracking through what people had been, you know, clicking and opening and reading in the customer newsletter. And we had been pushing, you know, product releases and things like that. And she came to me, she said, Sarah, I think our customer newsletter needs to be focused much more on like education and thought leadership. That's what's getting more of the clicks than the product releases. And I know we want our customers to know about the product releases, but what if I break out a separate communication and we just do a quarterly product release notes kind of push? Go for it. The customer newsletter is continuing to skyrocket in terms of engagement. And now we're running a separate quarterly release notes. So again, it's that balance of like value add, like what's happening in the market, general tips and tricks on best practices and compensation plans, and then separating out what you need to know in the product and doing that a little differently. And then having a kind of quarterly, you know, ask me anythings with our product team to allow customers to join. Yeah. So that's one way the team's done it.
you just hit on something that I also feel like is so unbelievably important to talk about, and is this idea of being really respectful with customer time, because that also becomes very, very self-serving. Yep. With the way that you approach this, how do you think about guiding the customer journey from async communications? Like, truly, what can be an email? What can be a newsletter? What can be a blog post? What can be self-serve versus, hey, customer, we need to get on a call with you and take up your calendar time? It actually sounds like you've got maybe a unique or better approach to this, because you know as well as I do that every company, it's like, we got to get them on a call. Got to get them on a call. Got to get them on a call. Got to take up their calendar time constantly. Yep. Where do you feel like that's broken?
On a funny note about that, I remember one of my CS leadership roles a number of startups ago, and my CEO coming into my office pretty much on a weekly cadence, being like, did you get them on the phone? I'm like, they do not want to talk to me. Like, our product, basically, our claim to fame was a quarterly report that the customers loved, but they did not want to talk to me in between that. They did want to attend the, you know, the webinar review of the results that I did every quarter, but they did not want to talk to me in between. And I just, like, after a while, I'm like, you just have to accept they do not want to talk to us.
If you can't beat them, join them. They don't want to talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And meet them where they're at. Right. So back to, like, how do you figure out when to email, when to LinkedIn, when to create a Slack group? A lot of people are talking about, should we create a Slack group?
Deal rooms. And
there are a couple of approaches here. One thing that we're experimenting with right now, it's a little bit early days at QuotaPath, but I'm super excited for what the team is doing, is that we've shifted some of that kickoff call work into kind of a questionnaire. So we send that out to new customers beforehand, and we actually use that to guide the kickoff call. It's actually allowed us to keep that kickoff call a little bit shorter because we have some of that critical information we need and we received it async. The second part is we have this one point in our product where we can track whether the customer hit that milestone or not. So it's a simple way to ask, like on almost on a scale, hey, how successful were you in running payouts, you know? And then if they want to speak with us afterwards or they want to tweak something, great. But if they're like, hey, it was smooth, good to go, fantastic. Right. So I don't have to force you to have that. I do need to check in with you, but I don't need to require a call about it. And we can work how you want to work. The other part that QuotaPath does really, really well is participation in communities. And I think that balance of, you know, should we create our own community or join communities? I mean, we're in the sales space. There are tons of great networks out there in RevOps. So, you know, whether it's Pavilion or RevOps Co-op or RevGenius, you know, all these fabulous communities. So what's most important is that we show up there, whether that's to share knowledge or to, you know, answer a quick question. We've had a couple people that actually even give products feedback in those communities. Right now, it's somebody from my marketing team who is in that community. But I can't wait until some of the customer success managers are in the communities too, answering questions in real time and sharing their expertise.
It's interesting because, you know, I hear conversations all the time around, do we form, and it's usually led by marketing, right? Do we form our own customer community? So it's the community of customers who all use X product. And I'm one of those people where I believe, like you do, that community is unbelievably valuable, but time is a precious and depreciating asset. And you only have so much time to be able to dedicate yourself to a community versus your actual job. And it sounds like you lean in by sort of some of these external communities where you know your customers are and you meet them there versus trying to build a community where you are trying to isolate and pull your customers into a secondary one. Why do you feel like that works better?
Right now, I feel like in this market, this works better because there's so much conversation in those communities. You know, it could change down the road, but right now I think it's better to meet people where they're at than try to pull them to us. Again, what you were saying of, like, a lot of times we're so inside out, we're pushing our agendas first. I felt like if I were trying to create my own community, it would be more self-serving than it would be for the customer, you know? And I have so many different places where I can meet our customers and prospects today that's where we're at today. Yeah. I think what we are trying to test the waters on a little bit that I'm really excited about we started one to many user trainings. And our first one, you know, like had a live chat, but it didn't have any interaction. And so this next one we're going to do at the end of this month is going to have real-time interaction between customers. And so I'd like to see what the engagement rate, and we're going to do this once a month ongoing, and see if the customers want to start sharing with each other, you know, because, hey, if Joe, the RevOps leader at this company, wants to banter with, you know, the RevOps leader at this other company and share, oh, this is how I thought about it, but that's not what. It won't work that way. Here's a way to make it work better. Here's how you have to change your Salesforce or HubSpot CRM to get that kind of deal value. Then great. But if they're all a little tight-lipped, then that tells me, you know, that we're not ready for that kind of community yet.
We're not there. Yeah. Well, and the other difficult thing about participating in external communities is while your customers are there, so many of them take on sort of the like, hey, we're Switzerland vibe, where it's like, you can come in here. But they almost want folks to come in as themselves, as individuals. And there's a lot of like, there's no selling, there's no pitching, there's no nothing. Yeah. How do you find that you can, from a business standpoint or lead generation standpoint, maximize on communities and build certainly individual relationships, but also have that brand awareness when, you know, like if we call out the elephant in the room, most people in there are just like, how do I sell these people without selling these people and getting kicked out of this community? Do you have any secret sauce for how to advertise in, you know, while being quiet?
I mean, I think we're not, dare I say it's a market, but we're not trying to advertise. We're trying to share our knowledge and our expertise. And that's really like a core brand value at Quotapath too, is that we want to be approachable and mindful, you know, so we want to share our expertise and we want people to feel confident in running their commissions. And we're not there to pitch you on Quotapath. We're there to give you a few ideas. And that's why our blog is much more of how-to resources. So we'll share a link to a resource or something, but, you know, we're not there to advertise and pitch. We are there to educate. Yes. And learn ourselves. Like, it's really fascinating to hear, you know, where people are having struggles. We actually just did a survey at Quotapath of 500 sales, RevOps, and finance leaders, and 97% all agreed that they struggled with their comp plans in the past year.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you can get some good data from there as well that does certainly serve prospects and customers. I mean, it sounds like just going with good intention and a learning growth mindset is the way. We love that. We love that. And I feel like, you know, maximizing on community, there's a lot of information that flies around on that. And I think there's maybe not a lot of good tactics. We could probably spend another entire episode just talking about maximizing communities in every single way, but we don't have time today. And I want to make sure that we have time for our rapid reveal section, if you are up for it.
I'm up for it. I'm ready.
Yes. Okay, great. I've got three questions for you.
Okay.
50 seconds or less to answer each. That's a loose rule.
Okay.
And this is just meant to help the audience get to know you a little bit better. So question number one, what is your earliest childhood memory?
I remember crawling into the corner kitchen cabinet and playing in there. I think I was banging on pots and pans. I think maybe I was stacking and organizing. Maybe that was an inherent part of me. Sure. And there's something about, I think I liked hiding a little bit too, like having my own space and hiding out a little bit.
I love that as a baby, you crawled into a cabinet to hide, but also to organize.
Yeah, like to organize, yep.
It wasn't just about the hiding. You were like, also to clean.
Yeah. Just if anybody ever wants like a kitchen refrigerator, you know, reorganization, it's my jam. I'd love to come to your house and reorganize your refrigerator. My best friend, my parents, and my grandmother are very used to me doing it to this at their house regularly.
I might take you up on that because I'm real bad at it. I'm real bad at it.
Why do you have yogurt on every shelf? Put all the yogurts in one place.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then I'll put, you know, hard seltzers right next to regular seltzers. And I have a child and that just feels like a weird game of roulette where you don't know. And so I could definitely use some help with that. We'll do that async. Number two, what's an irrational fear of yours?
So one thing we haven't talked about, Christina, is I am an avid triathlete. I have raced and finished 7 Ironman triathlons. What? So I spend a ton of time on my bicycle riding, you know, thousands of miles every year. And I live up in the Adirondacks right now. There are a lot of deer and other wildlife. I have had to stop for a bear to cross the road, but my most irrational fear is actually getting hit by a deer while I'm cycling. There are so many deer, especially in the fall and in the spring, and they're really out and about in the evenings. And every now and then I do have to be like, hey, just wait there. Because you know how much damage a deer does to a car.
When you hit the deer, right? Right. You're worried the deer is going to hit you.
I'm cycling along and the deer runs into me. That is not going to be good. So,
like a deer is going to bolt across the road and just barrel right into you?
Right.
That's a terrifying, I mean, I would, the bear to me more after seeing The Revenant, you think about a bear and you're like, oh, it's a bear, but like, you know, kind of fluffy. And then you're like, actually.
The bears are slow though. And the deer are fast and they're unexpected. Fast. So that's why I'm terrified of getting hit by a deer. I don't know any cyclist who's ever been hit by a deer.
There isn't one until it happens. There's right? I'm not helping your fear though by saying like it hasn't happened yet. Yeah. I was telling myself, yeah, everyone says it like, you know, when XYZ thing is super safe. I'm like, yeah, until I do it. And then I'm going to be the person that is the cause of the warning label that has to go on it, right? Like until it happens, you know, these are the things that we think about. All right. Number 3, what is the best thing that you learned at your very first job?
So I think I'm telling you, I started out as a teenager teaching swimming lessons, no surprise from my triathlon background now that you know it. And I taught swimming lessons at a summer camp and from the morning all the way to the early afternoon. My morning started with 4-year-olds and my day ended with 14-year-olds. So one of the biggest lessons I had to learn was actually how to meet my customer, if you will, or meet my swimmers where they were at. Which meant that I had to take what I knew, how to teach swimming and how to be a great swimmer, and I had to customize it for those different audiences. So for the 4-year-olds, I had to talk about scooping up a, you know, jar of goldfish, or I had to educate them on the difference between their hands and their feet, because I'd ask them to kick their feet and they'd wave their hands. And I just had to be silly, right? It had to be fun and silly. The 14-year-olds, they were sassy. And if I wasn't ahead of the game, they would push me in the pool before I could even tell them, you know, what set we were swimming for the day. So I had to learn to adjust my message to kind of how to challenge right back at them the way they were going to challenge me, and how to create that kind of fun, healthy sense of competition amongst them in their swimming and in the final kind of session of the day. So meet your audience where you're at.
I love it. I imagine so much of this is also why you're such an incredible communicator, you know, having to switch that rapidly, you know, while also teaching them something, right? Like you need them to hear you. You need them to do it. And it's in the water. So it needs to be safe.
Yep.
It's high stakes. I love it. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you and learning from you. And I can only imagine that folks listening would love to, and not only get to learn more about Quota Path and the incredible work that you're doing there, but just get to know you and more of your brilliance. So where can folks either find you and or go find more about Quota Path?
Find me, connect with me on LinkedIn, just at Sarah Strope at LinkedIn. And best to find Quota Path at quotapath.com or follow us on LinkedIn as well.
Amazing. Thank you for being on the show. We appreciate you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Taking the Lead. If you're looking for more inspiring stories from women leaders in B2B tech, then visit us at motionagency.io/takingthelead.